Welcome back to No Chill with Gilbert Arenas. We got a very special guest today. Played in the league for 6 seasons, was a former first-round draft pick, one of the most dominant big men in the game during his time. Now you can catch him making beats for people like Party Next Door, doing his things. Larry Sanders, we appreciate you pulling up.
I appreciate y'all for having me, man, for sure.
No problem, no problem.
So first and foremost, you know, when you rolled through looking at you, still look like you're in great shape, still like you could hoop. Yeah. Have you completely given up on that, or are you trying to get back into the league?
Well, no, I work out. I run, you know, I love to run, and I box. You know, I kickbox too a little bit. And I'm getting ready for, I put
these feet up in the
air. I put these feet and hands in the air, baby. You feel me? So, I'm training, you know, the big three starts June 19th. So, you know, stay in shape, get ready for that.
And then when you look, you know, I know you're still doing the big three, still doing the hoop thing, but, you know, you look at the NBA, do you still think, just like I said, you're 33, man, you still look good. And when you were playing at the height, I mean, you could do your thing.
Yeah.
So do you still think there's a chance or opportunity for you to make a comeback? We saw a lot of guys even this year kind of getting the little guys like IT3 coming back now doing their thing. So do you still think that that's a possibility?
Well, I like the landscape. And I like how open the league is. You know, I think it's evident that having a defensive big down the stretch is important. You know, someone that can guard these guys, and you don't have to double. You know, there's no X and swing and someone running to the corner. Yeah. You know what I mean? Light your ass up. You got somebody that's gonna be able to sit down and defend, one through five. So I see where I can add value on different teams, you know, especially teams who are trying to make that push. So, I know my place, you know what I'm saying? I know what I bring to the team. I know my value, and, I think I can add value for sure.
Sure. Now, during a recent interview, I saw you said that I want to be the best me. How close are you to becoming the best version of yourself?
Man, that's a good one. It's a daily thing, man, you know, and what I'm learning is that, through this adversity, you know, I'm 33 now, you know, just going through the ups and downs of being an entrepreneur, dealing with family, that's the test, you know. It's like the test comes in the hard times, you know, when the storm hits. Can you hold strong? Can you remember your values? Can you still be persistent with your goals? That's the constant test, and, you know, that's showing me that I'm making progress. You know, I'm actually moving through these things with grace and these different obstacles in my life. You said music, which is, I love to do music, but I'm actually transitioning to a writer.
Okay.
I'm finishing my basketball movie now that I'm writing. I've written 3 books, a child book, a fantasy fiction, and an autobiography. So I'm writing right now. Like, that's my focus. I'm putting everything on paper, you know what I'm saying? So, I'm just
putting thoughts to paper.
I mean, you have to, you know what I'm saying? And still being in shape. It's just that this all goes into the me being the best me, you know what I'm saying, and figuring me out. So I'm enjoying the journey for sure.
For sure. And let's take it to your career, man. 2010, you get drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks. What was that culture shock for you, like going from VCU to Milwaukee?
It's crazy, man. I mean, like, I started playing basketball, organized basketball when I was 15, and I was in the league when I was 23, you know, 22. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, in 7 years. So everything was fast as shit, you know what I'm saying? And it happened at a blink of an eye, but I loved VCU. I loved the school. I loved the atmosphere, the culture. There was no football team, man, so you know how we get down. It was all basketball.
Yeah, basketball.
Come on, man. Come on, man.
All love.
Y'all got me, bro. What do I sign? You know, it was a beautiful thing, man, and we won. You know what I'm saying? We won at a high level. We had Eric Maynard, who got drafted, mm-hmm. you know, OKC the year before me. You know, he got drafted 20 before the year before me. I got drafted 15, and then next year they go to the Final Four. So that tell you how cold we was.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yes, you're right.
We just lost 2 pros and went to the Final Four. You know what I'm saying? So, we was cold, man. We worked hard, we played hard, and it was a great atmosphere. And I think that's what kind of molded me into the defensive monster I was. You know what I'm saying? I had Anthony Grant, Shaka Smart, and Wreaking Havoc shit ain't no joke. Mm-hmm. We pressing full court, and I'm in the front of it. And I'm gonna block your shot at the back of that bitch. Yeah. I'm running, you know, so I gotta get back and forward quick. I gotta hustle. I gotta play without fouling. You know, it was a lot. in a short period of time that I had to learn that made me ready for the next level. So, you know,
was college easier mentally than the NBA?
No, hell no. You know how them conditioning days is, man. Like, we had 20 and 20s.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah, 20 suicides in 20 minutes. And each suicide has to be ran under 33 seconds with a guard. And I ran with the guards.
Oh, you didn't have, by the time you came in the league, they didn't do that. See, when I came in the league, they were still doing that.
I know. Y'all practiced at VCU.
Yeah, we did. I watched by the time I got there.
Y'all was on training camp.
Like, we had to do suicides before we got to training camp.
Yeah, okay.
Like, so before we got to training camp, we had to go through conditioning drills.
See, I did that as a rookie, but no, it wasn't mandatory. I was doing that shit, you know, you had to do that check.
We had to, before you can, like, it was my second year, before we can get to training camp to be able to train in training camp, participate, we had to go through, like, guard drill. Yeah. We had to do, like, 10 up and downs in a certain amount of time.
Man, niggas was showing the training camp fat as hell, man. That's when they was getting in shape. Was burping.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, people, like, that's what I said. Like, back then, like, people waited to training camp because they got 30 days to get in shape before the season started.
Facts, yeah. So when I came, in the league, it wasn't mandatory like that. So, yeah, college was definitely more. And then, you know, well, I guess the demand on your body, you know, 82 games plus preseason, postseason, that's nothing. That's a beast that you can't even explain, you know. So that, I guess there's in different ways. One is, you know, one can be more strenuous at times. It was cool, man. I transitioned in. Like I said, I started playing early, so I didn't know a lot of shit. I didn't know a lot of terminology, and I had Scott Skiles, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I was having Anthony Grant, Shaka Smart, fucking Scott Skiles, bro.
Yeah.
And like, hey, Scott. You already know. Scott, but it was tough there, man. Like, it was tough. You know, he had a lot of guys that came, and like, we were at the time that team that players would come to try to get their next deal and get out. Like, it was like a, you know, the journeyman team. You know what I'm saying? We had a lot of guys come in for 1 year, try to get their deal.
Was Michael Redd still there?
Red was popping up sometimes. He was still on paper.
Oh, yeah.
He'd pop up in practice once in a while, you know what I'm saying? Show face like he the president.
I'm still here. What's happening?
Exactly. What up? And so then,
the mask man,
you know, give him a little speech and walk off. But Red was cool as hell.
It was them older coaches the league, them older coaches that still had that mentality of kill you through training camp, kill you through practice.
Yeah.
And it was like, because, you know, I had Eddie Jordan. So I remember I went to Eddie one time because we was doing all this running. And I said, hold on, man. I was like, what is the point of getting, this is what I said, what's the point of getting in shape in the summer if you're going to kill us when we get here?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm in shape. Look, I lost. Dude. And I said, look at everybody. Look at us. Where everybody's sitting there like, dying. He looked. And then he called it was like a 20-minute break, 20-minute water break. He went to the strength coach, looked at everybody's numbers from when they ended the season to now, and said, you know what? For the most part, everybody's in shape. Everybody's in shape, so why am I going to penalize y'all for being in shape? Let's just work on offense. And that right there told everybody, like, oh, shit, we're getting rewarded. We're getting rewarded for being in shape. Mm-hmm. So every year, we'll come in September 1st, and as a group.
Right, make sure, yeah.
As a group, we all just, like, we played, we did the bleachers together. Like, it was, you know, so no one's just really rushing to do nothing.
Right.
We're going to run the bleachers at our time. Everybody's getting in shape. He's seeing everybody get in shape. So he's seeing the progress. Everybody's trying to work. We're playing. Mm-hmm. So when practice started and training camp started, he wasn't taxing us.
Right.
It was more like, all right, we're going to practice. All right, you don't need to practice today. And he was doing it himself because, you know, she was with Showtime. You know, so you already know how they work.
Right.
You know what I mean? He was with Sacramento Kings, and then he went with Jersey. So just talking to him. You know, like, yo, hey, nigga, we ain't from the 80s. We ain't sitting here running with cocaine in our body, all right?
Exactly.
We got a regular Red Bull. Facts. We got the regular Red Bull, all right? That shit wears off, my brother.
Nah, facts.
But he understood, and that's, you know, I got to always, like, when I look at a coach like that and then hear coaches that's just killing players, I'm like, I have an old school dude who you just told him, like, yo, look at us. All right.
Facts.
Did you see a benefit in that, though, compared to, because, I mean,
at every level of hoop, you always talk like that preseason conditioning is going to get you through the whole season. But you're playing 30, 40 game season in high school, college. Now you get to the league, 82 games. Do you really need to be as in shape as you need to be to start the season?
You don't, but the benefit was, like, because remember, if you practice 40 minutes to an hour and a half once a week, maybe, and you're playing so much, training can't be, that's the hardest, that becomes the hardest part of basketball. Like, that training camp, oh, man, we got 2-a-days for about 2 weeks straight. That becomes, like, dreadful, right? Facts. It's not that hard. College is way harder. But the fact that we haven't done it in so long, once we get there, so it's like I'm trying to minimize that. Like, yo, we can do more offense. we can do more offense. Right. let's play a little bit more. Right. Like, why are you penalizing us? You know, and that was the thing with Eddie. Like, if y'all come in shape, we're not running in training camp.
Right.
Because you got to remember, for most people, if somebody's running and you know, if you're running all summer and then training camp coming, this nigga making you do 20 and 20, you're gonna be like, you on the same playing field as the dude who ain't do nothing.
Right. I think that's the benefit of having a young coach that's a player too, rather than having an old coach that probably never played or was like playing back when the cocaine was in his body and shit. So you know what I'm saying? So yeah, it's an evolutionary process, man. The league is it's coming more player oriented for sure. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing, man. So it's not a bad thing for sure.
Let's go back to your rookie season. Mm-hmm. My pops was drafted by the Bucks in 1977.
Okay.
But he always tells these stories that he had to experience his first Milwaukee winter. He was coming from L.A., and he said that shit was dreadful. It was cold as shit, just something he couldn't prepare for mentally. You know, coming from L.A., where wintertime we might get 80-degree heat wave, you just never know. So, let's go back to your rookie year, dealing with that first Milwaukee winter. With Scott Skiles as your head coach,
man.
What's going through your mind?
I'm from Florida. I'm from Florida too, where the sun always shining. So, man, it was cold as shit. I try not to think about that shit, man. Like, it was so cold that you had to wear layers and your skin couldn't be exposed. And, you know what I'm saying? Like, God damn, y'all live here by choice. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I get it, man. Like, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do, but. As far as the people, it's good people, bro. They're great people, actually. They work hard. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It has a huge African-American community that I didn't know. I'm like, where the hell is Milwaukee? I'm getting drafted there. I'm like, I couldn't point to it on the map. Swear to God. But then, you know, when I got there, I'm like, damn, there's a lot of people out here that look like me that need help, too. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it was a good way to kind of contribute and give back. We did a lot of shit with the school system and whatnot. We still do. You know, we just got me and my homie, and some guys that work within the city, built like one of the largest affordable housing units in Wisconsin. It's like 197 units. We got a cafeteria, a creative corridor, looking for like programming and funding. So man, it's just, I took advantage of that aspect of it, you know what I'm saying? Because if y'all gonna draft me and adopt me, you know what I'm saying? I'm gonna try to give everything I can back to y'all because y'all need that shit. And it kind of sucked that, like, downtown, it's just segregated on purpose, you know what I'm saying? They kind of pride themselves on that shit still, you know, on like, you can't come in if your jeans too baggy or you know, they just want this certain look. But it's like, y'all, it's like, a whole bunch of black people this motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? And when I was playing, that's who bought all the tickets. Mm-hmm. You know, now it's full of, you know, whoever, downtown, you know, but, you know, that's where their support came from where I was there, you know what I'm saying? The longevity of it, the diehard fans, you know, and, you know, winning a championship was huge because I know that was so big for the city, man, those people who lived there. But they got to give back to them a little bit more and make them the face of, you know what I'm saying, the Milwaukee. When you look at the Milwaukee Bucks and the team and all that shit, that's black people there.
Yeah.
A lot of them, poor black people, you know what I'm saying? So
that's how Washington was. When I first got there, you know, D.C. was...
Man, Baltimore.
Yeah, that's... Shit. But D.C. and Baltimore, that's a different place.
Right, it is, bro. Yeah. But just close enough. Shit.
But by the time you got in, it's changed. See, D.C., when I got to D.C., none of that stuff was built.
Right, right.
All the stores that was built around, that wasn't there yet.
Right. So it was more.
So when I got there, they were trying to convince me to live in DC.
Mm-hmm.
So live in DC so it can bring more people to show. I was like, I don't want to live in an apartment building or a condo. I want to at least get in my own house. I like, I'm, I'm just finished being broke. I know what broke feels like. I just got my contract. I'm trying to, I'm trying to get into one of these houses.
Facts.
So I end up going to Virginia, but what ended up happening is they built that around and then moved everybody out.
Yeah,
that's what they did. Moved everybody out. That's once that downtown got fixed.
That's how they do. I was in Waldorf. I had a crib in Waldorf. Right there.
Yeah, see, I was in Great Falls. I was out of VA.
Nice, man.
But that's
VA
what I said. But they built DC so nice.
Yeah, they did. They did. But that's how they do Milwaukee now.
Oh, that's
Milwaukee nice now, man. They done built up that city, you know.
Because we used to go like Milwaukee. Oh my God, this place is horrible. We called it three of them. It was Milwaukee, Minnesota,
At least Minnesota got that big ass ball.
Memphis.
You ain't like Memphis?
What?
Okay.
2010, they had one street. It was Bill Street.
Okay.
So I went there and I was like I went there and was like, all right, let's go to the mall. And they was like, yeah, we don't, the mall closed.
Right.
How the Does a mall close? How does a whole mall just close? Like I understand stores, a few stores, but the whole mall just went under. Like it was like a ghost town. I'm just saying like, they're about to rebuild this whole thing up there.
Yeah. See, I had CDR on my team. I had a Memphis. He played for Memphis.
Okay.
So we was on campus and shit. We seen a whole other lifestyle.
I can't get too much into that. I want to make sure it makes the
interview. I was a rookie.
Nah, I get it.
I was young enough.
Because I want to make sure it makes the interview.
I was fresh out of college, though. But no, your career in Milwaukee started off strong. You were doing your thing.
Yeah.
Bucks gave you a four-year, $44 million extension, I want to say like 2013. And then things kind of started to take a turn a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I just want to know, what were you going through kind of mentally and emotionally at that point?
Yeah, man, it was cold as shit. No, I'm playing. it was just a lot, man. I think if you kind of like, if I backtrack a little bit, like I said, I started playing ball when I was 15. I played 1 year AAU, you know what I'm saying? So I fell in love with the basketball culture. I was adopted by it. I was tall, you know, I was fast. You know, I had these attributes that were attractive and fit into the game. But a lot of it, I didn't resonate with my soul, honestly. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a natural entrepreneur. I grew up, I had my own line service when I was a kid. You know, I was selling snacks out the garage. I was the candy lady, you know what I'm saying? You come over here and get what you need. I was selling that shit in school, you know what I'm saying? I was just used to kind of just making money and being my own boss. Like, that's kind of just how I was. I got taller, I started playing ball, started getting good at this shit, and next thing you know what I'm saying, I'm in the league, and just having to like conform to like someone else's standards all the time was just an issue. You know what I'm saying? I like living life on my terms because I can and thrive. You know what I'm saying? I don't really need to do that. You know what I'm saying? Even though I love playing basketball, you know what I'm saying? I just know I can get it. So being talked to certain kind of ways, kind of that bought and sold atmosphere, you know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't really like that shit for real, man. You know, like, have a conversation with me. Don't let me see some shit on the news about where I'm going and, you know, I got a family, you know what I'm saying? I got kids, you know what I'm saying? We all got, what we gonna do? You know what I'm saying? I gotta uproot tomorrow and they gotta figure it out by the phone, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's so much. I had two children, you know, and it was go to the hospital and see your kid and come back, be here before, you know what I'm saying? It was shit like that. Yeah. Like, it was just no, I didn't feel like a human. I felt more like a product in a lot of ways, like, you know, and very disposable. So, you know, I just wanted to add a little more value to my presence, I felt, you know, and it weighed on my mental health. You know, I was, like I said, it was very cold. I needed sun. You know, seasonal depression is a real thing. You know, going into my early 20s, I feel like that's when I had a lot of, I started dealing with anxiety. That's when I started smoking weed. I didn't even smoke weed till my second year in the league, after the lockout. You know, we was locked out the first year, after my first year. And then during the lockout is when I picked up, you know what I'm saying? Niggas just stressed out. And I was with other NBA niggas, so you know how that goes. We was all in that bitch blazing. And it was helping, you know? When my most consistent year smoking weed and playing was when I averaged, you know, three blocks and a double-double. You know what I'm saying? And I was like microdosing, you know, hit a couple times, go to sleep, you know what I'm saying? But I was being penalized for that shit on the other end. you know, and it was like, I know what's good for me. You know, I know how to, you know, and I know these alternatives that y'all are offering me are going to put me in a weaker position in the long term. Like, right now, it might be cool, might help with the craving, but these pills and shit, like, they have residual effects, you know what I'm saying, on my mental that y'all don't got to deal with. Mm-hmm. Y'all don't care, you know what I'm saying? I got to deal with that shit. My family got to deal with that shit, you know what I'm saying? It's just in different ways. So, you know, I was smoking weed consistently, averaging 3 blocks and a double-double, and then summertime comes, and they're like, you got to go to rehab for 90 days. You know, I'm sitting in rehab.
For marijuana.
Yeah,
wait,
for
marijuana. What NBA are you talking about?
I went to rehab for 3 summers before I retired. Now, this is what I'm going through with them. You know, I was kind of like
this. This ain't the NBA I know, because So you wasn't in the program?
I was.
Did you volunteer to be in the program?
I volunteered. I had to because I didn't know. I smoked during the thing, uh-huh. And then they tested me right when I got back, and I was like, "Man, let me put myself in a program because they say if you put yourself in, you won't get suspended."
Yeah.
So I put myself in because I knew that shit. My shit probably gonna be dirty. I didn't know it took 30 days to be out your system. I didn't really know the rules around the weed. You know what I'm saying? I just started smoking this
sometimes
shit.
Sometimes 30,
wait a minute, and then I found out because of my low body, I got like 8% body fat.
Yeah,
it probably burns. It wouldn't have showed up.
Burning out of your joint.
Hold on. You ain't get the tutorial.
No.
You didn't even get the tutorial.
Listen.
Wait, so you got suspended and stuff for that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I was gonna say, because nobody's ever been. When was the last time somebody got suspended for weed in NBA?
When I came in, Beasley was getting hit up, JR was getting hit up.
Because what happened, the secret was right before training camp, right before you find out, you get real.
But see, there was the lockout. We started back out of nowhere.
But that's when you say, "Yo, I'm an addict." But whatever your numbers is, so you hitting the brownie, you hitting all this, yeah. And you get this high ass dosage.
Yeah, and then you work it down.
And then you work it down.
See, I came in with a low ass dosage, so probably everything that.
So looked everything like, you it looked did. Like you wasn't.
Yeah, because I have a low body count. Low body fat.
You were supposed to like get it really high up and then like every test is as long as it's lower than this. Yep. You're working on pocket.
Exactly.
That was like the loophole.
Yeah, I know.
That was a loophole for the weed smokers.
Right, right.
That nobody really knew about.
That makes perfect sense.
So it was like one of those.
I did the opposite.
Yeah, you did the opposite.
You're not stopping. You're not trying to stop.
Yeah, you
I'm like, motherfucker, I only hit that bit 2 times.
I hit it 2 times. You like, wait a minute.
I'm like, why y'all still on my ass?
Yeah, because that's what I said. I had players that smoked during the season. It was like,
yeah, bro. So yeah, that's why.
But now they don't even care about it. Now they don't even test.
Not even test, man. You know what I'm saying? So
our testing was backwards. It was, then you had to get tested. So part of your 4, you get tested in the summer too then.
Yep. I got tested in the summer. They had to pull up, they had to know where I was, whatever city. The closest NBA team, they had to come or firefighter.
Yeah, you had to respond in what, 24 hours?
Yeah, yeah.
So explain that to me, because
I never smoked, but I had to understand, like.
So 24 hours, you got to get to the nearest facility to go.
No, they're coming to you.
They're gonna find you.
Yeah, they gonna say where you at.
And what if you were like the Maldives, like LeBron, and that's like a 9-hour flight?
Then they probably leave you alone. You gotta tell them how long you gonna be there.
Report to them before you.
Yeah.
No, you don't have to report to them before. Like if they hit you, you be like, oh, I'm on vacation with my family. When you coming back?
But see, you got somebody you talking to every week.
Yeah.
So you might as well tell them. And I tell them I'm gone, you know, I'll be next door.
leave
the fuck alone.
Yeah, in college, they call like, yo, we got a team meeting. I'm like, ooh, this smells fishy.
Yeah.
This is the middle of May. There's no random team meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm still in class, chief. I can't make the meeting. But
yeah, you already know what time it is.
Because you can just sense it.
Yeah, like, that's what I said. I didn't know they were that strenuous on. Because after you got my 4 tests, whatever. I didn't even smoke. I was like, damn, I wish I smoked weed.
Right.
But I had players who did, and they'd tell me their routine, and
we have a lot of OGs when I came in.
We had one player who had the Wizinator. Hey, that shit was hilarious.
He had the shit that was strapped to him with the tool.
Yeah, he had the thing that was strapped to him. Swear to God, he had the thing that was strapped to him.
Did it work?
Yeah.
It kept it the right temperature and all that?
Yeah, he went, he got in. Because back, this is why I started getting back, because they were using the Wizinator at first.
Okay.
So now you go into your stall close, like, nigga, ain't me looking at this. Go in there, use the Wizinator, get a man and stuff, and then boom. Once they start finding out people using that, then that's when motherfuckers, they be looking at you.
Yeah, they be looking.
Lift your shirt up. Shit.
Right.
They can be at that motherfucker like. Like,
yeah, that was, that was really like, demoralizing.
Back your ass.
I'll just say that.
Nah, but it was like, it was a, see, the thing is, the more superstars that got tested, so when they did testing in the summer, so in the summer, those tests didn't count against you with weed. So it was like, you can do weed in the summer, not during the season, no HGH during the summer, HGH during the season. That's the way it tested. They didn't tell anybody. So if you was on HGH during the season, I don't think it showed up.
Right.
So what happens is everybody that was testing in the summer, they're looking at who's who. So you get all these big names in here, they're like, all right, we ain't gonna do this right now because we ain't trying to suspend these type of players.
Exactly.
So, you know, so the rules were changing. Now, you know, now after the bubble, and they're like, wait, hold on, if y'all testing, we been smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, don't even worry about it.
Exactly. They was tearing that bubble up.
Yeah.
I heard it was in that.
So when you see that now, they got rid of it in the bubble, they got rid of it this year too. Yeah. Does it make you mad or frustrated at all to know that kind of you were penalized and stigmatized for something that's now free for everybody to do?
I just knew it was gonna happen, man. I'm like, this is the future, you know. And that was my argument with the doctors and all that. It's just I'm happy to see it, man. I don't want nobody to go through the shit I went through. Like, smoke, be free. I know what it does. I know you're gonna be able to eat and sleep and. You know what I'm saying? Make you a better, you know, function better. So, you know, I would like to think I'm a little part of the push, you know, make all that shit worth it, you know, so.
That's but as if you're a new school, I look at numbers. Like, what is the number saying? You know what I mean? It's like, what is the number saying? Oh, double, three blocks. Leave them. But see, that's, so I've been in situations where it's, judge me for what I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, leave me alone. What the fuck I do after this? Leave me
Right.
Penalize me when I get in trouble.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But okay, if I come in here smelling like weed and I go out there and score 50, what the problem is?
Right, facts.
You know what I mean? So when like Steve Nash is like, did you hear what Kyrie said? You.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, how much you have? 49? I don't care. You know what I mean? Those are the coaches I want. Like, yo,
exactly.
Like I don't want to judge you across the board because it might not. This might not affect, it might affect him, might not affect you.
Right.
You know what I mean? Let me see your product. Okay, all right, well, shit.
Yeah.
When it start affecting it, then I'll have that conversation. Other than that, I don't see it.
Right, facts.
But that's, you know, those are certain coaches. Because you're not gonna tell me.
How to
you're not gonna it's tell me man. 80s and 90s was playing very well basketball under just water and Gatorade, all right? Okay, I came in the NBA and motherfuckers drinking whole six packs
facts.
At the end of the bench.
Facts.
And y'all subbing these motherfuckers in the game.
Yeah.
That's what I said. Them little green Gatorade, motherfucker had a whole motherfucker.
Yeah, it was some shit in that motherfucker.
Drunk. So get in, motherfucker. That motherfucker wobbling. Like, don't try to tell me. Swear to God, wobbling up and down. Wobbling up and talking all through the game.
Yeah.
And coach be like, all right, hey, go on and get in there. Just sitting there just drunk. And I'm like, this is the NBA, bro. This is the NBA.
A couple of them want to be traded. They was coming in drunk, for sure.
Yeah, smoking. I had one of my teammates, like, he'd go smoke at halftime. Smoke at halftime to calm his nerves. And then come back in and play.
Yeah.
He'd smoke, go to the parking lot. We he'll run to the parking lot, smoke, come back.
Leaving the facility, going.
My rebound.
Yeah, I bet. Killing shit. Right.
Oh my God.
Like, cause he was like, because he was so, everything was so extreme to him.
Yeah.
Like he couldn't get on a plane without smoking, flying, all that. Like, to get him on a plane, that was a whole nother issue.
Yeah.
Damn.
Like, it'd be like we'll play a game, right? We'll play a game. And, you know, like, plane wheels up at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Nigga, it's 12 o'clock, and we still waiting for this man. This man done called in, my mom passed. I'm gonna have to see y'all when y'all get back.
Not his mom.
He called back somebody else. My dad done passed. Like, his whole family done passed.
That's what I'm saying.
So he didn't have to come.
Nobody better come to the game.
But that's what I said, but nobody, it was just excuses he always used. And I remember he got so mad because they believed him this time. Like, oh, your grandma passed? That makes sense, right? So they called the mom and said, yeah, you know, we want to give our condolences. you know, Danny, you know, what's his mother passed. And he was like, his grandma didn't pass. So they told him, oh, he got mad. He showed up to the plane just to complain. Don't you call my mother.
Damn.
You get your ass on a plane, man. But it was, but I seen that, like, you know, like certain things, certain elements people are not used to, just mentally, just they can't deal with it. Like, so watching players fly and watch how scared they get. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so like Troy Murphy didn't like to fly. Danny Fortson liked to fly. I mean, when I say he didn't like to fly, it was like a running joke because all of the flight attendants, like he'd be, like, you know how we sit? Mm-hmm. He'd be on the floor. He'd be on the floor, they're gonna put the blanket over him, and then the ladies are just rubbing his back while we're flying. Damn. And then one of them had to go in the cockpit. Oh yeah, so you wanna see yourself die, right? He used to say shit like that. Oh yeah, you wanna be front row, because he needed to see. But it was funny, it's like something his eyes needed to see,
yeah,
the plane, fact. Like being normal.
Yeah.
Like, and it was just weird, like, but you see two big men just struggling.
Yeah.
For like every road trip, and I'm like, yo, this is crazy. Just like, just the nerves. And I came in with Christian Lakner.
Oh,
he was the first one I like really like had a conversation with about just mental. Uh-huh. And because I mean, we went somewhere, and it was the first time that I seen a man just get booed. Just as soon as he came in, you know, came in like the last 7 minutes, and man, it was killing him. Mm-hmm. Just like, and I'd be like, yo, what you do? Mm-hmm. And he was like, this is how it's been my whole career. He said, this is the only time I get cheered is when whatever home team I'm playing for. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I get booed like this everywhere I go. He said, ever since it was college when I stepped on a dude's chest. And then he said, and plus I'm playing for Duke. Mm-hmm. We're the most hated team. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yo, how do you deal with this? He says, my therapist and Mary Jane. I was like, oh, your wife and me, I'm clueless. Your wife, Mary Jane? He's like, nah, Mary Jane. Yeah. And I was like, you can smoke? And he was like, no, yeah. He said, everywhere I go.
Yeah.
He said, man, he said, imagine going into a game knowing you about to get booed by the whole arena. He said, we're up 20. They supposed to leave. They stay just to boo me. And I said, I felt so bad because I felt like you can hear them boos like, damn. Woo-wee. Like, they hate this man. And he's just a man, I had to mentally deal with it. I had to mentally escape.
Yeah.
And I was like, I get it, but I don't get it. Cause
what do you think about that? Like how they, like the fans, you know, get to say whatever, sometimes get to do, you know, they don't really get penalized.
If I was commissioner, I know you're trying to make a stand on penalize the professional.
Right.
But it's not fair.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you know, you're telling the player who's, this is the emotional battle.
Right.
The emotional battle is the player playing in the element, you know, playing against the opponent, the referee playing against the referees,
right.
playing against the, you know, so if someone can say something to him and he says something back, but he gets penalized, that is just a bad,
makes sense.
You can't do that.
Right.
You can't say, all right, they're going to say whatever, your mama this, your mama that, and then he says, well, you find him $50,000.
Right.
No, you got to find out who dude is. He needs to be penalized. You are the NBA. You can penalize something. You can call his job and, like, this is a job.
I feel like if you was watching, like, two slaves fight in a pit and they were like, that slave right there, you stupid mother. And that slave said, shut up. Mm-hmm. I feel like the master was like,
yeah.
Don't stay in place.
It's always the
product. I'm just saying, that's just a...
it's like the product is always, no matter on what level, the product always gets penalized.
Facts.
Because
but we're not products, though. That's the problem.
But that's what's because these are the folks...
you ain't dealing with products, you're dealing with people.
But that's what I'm saying, but they look at it like, this is the product. These are the consumers.
Exactly.
They're paying for this.
Exactly.
And that's not really the case. Like,
it's only the case when you're dealing with slaves.
Yeah, he has a job.
And products, like, yeah.
He has a job. You're at his job. He has a job, too. So you need to penalize him, too.
Right.
You got to take his tickets away. You got to do something. You can't make it just one-sided.
If you look at them both like humans, yeah.
Yeah, you can't make it one-sided. Like, and that's the only thing I always hate. I'm like, well, we said it. I was like, well, they said something to Kyrie. It's fair game. He can say something back. He's a human. He can say something back. He's one that's mostly emotional.
Exactly.
He's playing. He's at that all-time high of the game and the elements. Right. They're just trolling.
Exactly. They drunk, man.
Yeah, they drunk and trolling. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you have to keep it, you have to keep it fair. And I think that's where the NBA or just sports does a bad job.
Right.
I think
it's almost, it should be like, you shouldn't speak until you're spoken to. You can say whatever you want, but if you're directing something to a player, that should be illegal for a fan to do. If it's not encouragement, it's almost like writing underneath somebody's Instagram, right? Mm-hmm. There are guidelines.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't bully somebody. You can't, you know what I'm saying? There are limits to your comment. You're going to be erased.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So do it.
Like mine is one of these. I like, all right, if you're going into, like just understanding just being a fan, right? And it should be known, like, if you can say something to him, he should be able to say something to you, period. That's how I. Mm-hmm. You throw a bottle at him, he should be able to throw a bottle back at you.
Right.
Like, there shouldn't be, I throw a bottle, you hit me, I get to sue you for $30 million.
Right.
I just don't ever like those rules in life. Those are just bad. Those are just bad things. Like, I seen the Mike Tyson thing, right? Mm-hmm. The guy's sitting there with him the whole time. Right. Just with him.
Right.
What do you expect to happen?
Right,
so he punches him, now I get to sue you.
Right.
You can't do that shit. You can't do that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't do, right. I can't antagonize you the whole time, and then you pop me, and then he be like, ah.
That's like breaking into someone's house and then breaking your leg.
And you get to sue them.
You get to sue them because you broke your leg in their house that you broke into.
No, you know that happened.
That's real.
Oh, yeah, that's real.
That's what I'm saying. These are these tough laws of me. Like, this shit got to change. Yeah, I got to change. That don't make sense. I'm about to break in your house and break my leg.
And break my leg. Yeah.
Wait till the shit out you. Home insurance.
12 a.m. tonight.
Yeah, home insurance. For real, that shit crazy, man.
So something you touched on, you said being a product versus being human. When you were playing in the league, did you feel human or did you feel like, because I feel like there's always this thing with fans, whatever money you're making, that's what's determined by the league's value, right? Like, there's owners that are signing checks, making more bread than you, but they'll look at you as you're prima donna, you arrogant, you stuck up, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like you were a product or like you were a human during your time in the league?
I definitely felt like I was a product, man. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, that's what made me feel so uncomfortable. I think that's what weighed on me so much. You know, like, when it came to, like, simple things, like, I didn't wear a headband, right? But we had Drew Gooden, we had Corey Maggette, we had who else? Steven Jackson. We had like six headband guys, right?
Oh, that was your team.
Earl, I think we had Earl too. Earl Boykins, he didn't wear a headband though. But we had like six headband guys, and Scott comes in after training camp. He's like, no headband rule. No headband rule. You can't wear a headband to play on this team.
For what? Because the headband traps sweat.
Because we had six guys who wear headband.
Just
they were bald.
But it keeps
they needed that shit because they had no hairline. Yeah, control. Just to f*** with them.
Just control.
Why are you doing that? What's up? What's up, Scott? You know what I'm saying? Why do you even have the power to do some shit like that? Like, I was sponsored by Converse. I was one of the last Converse basketball, like, guys. It was me, I think Kyle Korver, Zebo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they discontinued their basketball thing at the time, so I transferred to Nike. But before they discontinued, I would get free Chuck Taylors, right? And I'm a rookie, so I know a lockout's coming and shit. I'm wearing Chucks every game, mm-hmm. you know, to the game. And this is when we had that hard-ass dress code. You had to wear, like, a suit and shit.
Yeah.
But I had Chucks on. The GM brings me in at the time, and he's like, Larry, your shoes are too cheap. You need to spend your money. I'm like, I wear size 17, man. They don't even make my size. He's like, you can find it. You need Gucci's, Louis, you need to find something that. Fast forward, we get Mike Dunleavy. Guy wears a pair of white Chucks every game. Think he was ever pulled to the side and said, you know. I'm starting to make my exit.
Yeah.
I'm about to get up out of here.
That's what I said. It's like they do things that has no bearing on. It's like the little control. No. So this was rest in peace, Flip Saunders, right? He comes, We go through training camp. First of all, he calls me. Like, I get the call. It's the first time I ever got a call that said, I always get a call to somebody else. So what do you think, like, you need to do to help the team win? You know what I mean? Shit, shoot more, I guess. You know what I mean? I guess I got to shoot a little bit more.
Got to score.
So he was like, you know, last year you averaged this and this and this. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, if you average 22, you know, 7-5 will be a lot better. And I said, if I score 22, we're going to be shitty. And I said, you know, I know you're the coach, but as a player, if I can average this and you're telling me not to, who do you think is going to, like, get those extra shots? Like, because how I score has no effect on the other players. I score through free throws. I score through this.
Right.
You know,
right,
so you're telling me right. to take away certain things.
Right.
But, all right, you're the coach. I'm, okay, cool. So first game, Silk, they came on the bus and said, all right, we're going to have, what they call them shits? We're going to have... NFL has, I don't even know the name of it, because the curfew.
Okay.
He's like, yeah, he said, I don't even know the name of that shit, you know what I mean? But he
said, you never had a curfew?
That's funny as hell. That's funny as hell.
So he was like, yeah, we're going to have a curfew. Everybody has to be in the hotel at 9:00. Uh-huh. Like, all right. So you can just see players like, hell no. Nah.
Right.
So we had like a little team meeting.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm not doing no curfew. He's like, no, I go to the... So one player was like, yo, I go to dinner at 10.
Exactly, yeah.
That's part of my routine.
Yeah.
You know, we got Deshaun. I go to strip club, bro.
Right, right.
I got to go. I got to relax, man. I got to get my little element. I got to see some ass shaking night before the game.
Yeah.
So and then four other players like, that's who we go. It's us five.
Exactly.
So I'm like, that's five right there. Right. I said, that's five of the teammates right there. Then, what do you do? He's like, man, I usually go to dinner. We got 6, movie, 7. So I'm like, shit, our whole team. And it was like, what you gonna do, Gil? I like, so I went to Sam and said, man, what are we having this is a curfew shit for? We've never had no curfew before. It's like, yeah, nah, we trying to, you know, change shit. I said, first of all, I'm a 3-time All-Star, 3-time All-NBA. You ain't gonna tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I tried to pull one of those.
Hey, the other five that stayed in, they was either white or European.
No, it was just they didn't know. They were young. No, it was the young. It was like Nick okay. Young. So it was okay. like Nick Young. It was the young.
Okay.
So they don't really know. They don't, yeah. You know, they coming from college, so they probably used to the curfew.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we're trying to figure out, because we got the older vets and we got the young guys, they're trying to control the young guys. So they figure if we put a blanket over it, so Sam Cassell was like, now, this is what we're gonna do. Y'all gonna get fined.
Sam was there, huh? Yeah, I remember.
So Sam is like, I'm like, Sam, come on, dog. You never had no.
Right.
What the? Sam is like,
can Sam say that?
Sam, like, I know.
That was killing me.
He's like, Sam is like,
they
said
him to be the best.
That's what I said. Sam is like, look, I know. And Sam's like, I'm just the messenger.
Right.
I said, well, if you.
Right. He's like, I gotta do this shit.
So I was like, all right, man. I was like, listen, we just gonna have to do what we're gonna have to do. He's like, come on, Gil, please be in here at 9. I was like, look, you ain't got to worry about me. I'm usually in the hotel.
Right.
But I was like, listen, I got these motherfuckers. If I don't stand ground, they looking at me as
right.
a
right. traitor.
I'm the traitor over here. So I was like, shit. Since I said, we have to be in at 9,
mm-hmm.
right? He didn't say that we couldn't party this motherfucker after 9. He just said we had to be in the hotel at 9.
Right.
So what I did, I was like, all right, look, for the strip club guys, I called DG, we was playing Dallas.
Uh-huh.
I called DG Show Club. I said, I need 10 of your finest.
You're a good
to
man.
To come through the hotel. And I said, you know what?
Yeah.
This is what we're gonna do. Make sure they have the spark, they gotta wear their outfits uh-huh. at 9. So they get out of the car at 9, come in the hotel at 9:01
mm-hmm.
with the sparklers, the drinks, and the outfits on.
Yeah.
9:00 cuts.
All the coaches in the lobby.
They're all in the lobby trying to make sure.
Right,
and all you see was just a whole bunch of strippers coming in with drinks.
Dog,
and shit.
You a gold, bro.
And we
the
guys had a party. So
that's
shoot around the next day. Oh, you can face red.
Right.
Living. Oh, right. Niggas half drunk and sleeping shit.
Yeah.
Right? He's mad trying to like, but we couldn't function. Everybody was asleep.
Yeah.
And they were asleep. They were still asleep. So he's like, y'all better win. If not, we end up beating Dallas.
Yeah, facts.
And then he was all happy. And I'm like, yo, it's the element.
You gotta relax.
I said, sometimes people just need their comfortability.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't about what they're doing. It's like, that's part of their routine. Mm-hmm. Like, some people can, you know, like, I remember, did you ever tell your story about Iverson?
Which one?
The time he took two weeks to, like, be normal.
You lost it for a second?
No. So,
what happened?
So, what ends up happening is, he takes 2 weeks. They was like, man, if you're averaging this, and this, drinking and partying every night, uh-huh. Imagine if you didn't do that. Uh-huh. Imagine if you ate clean and did this. Uh-huh. So 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Went to sleep early, uh-huh. Ate, didn't drink. Uh-huh. Worst 2 weeks of his career.
I bet it was.
Yeah, he said that man said, man, hell no, nah, man. Went right. Out there, got drunk, got 50.
Back in his element.
Yeah, that's because his element is part of his routine. Yeah. You know, some people, like, you try to take away their routine, yeah. And that's what messes up everything. So you're telling people, don't wear headbands, and you're messing up what they, man, that's part of their game. Exactly. That's part of their cape.
Exactly.
So you made the decision at 26 to retire. You had your whole future ahead of you, prime. When you look back now, are you satisfied with that decision? Or are there any regrets? Are you happy with the choice that you made?
No, yeah, for sure. I probably would have took some more money, but you know, I left with 15 out of 44. But I understanding it now, you know, I worked for that contract. That was money I put that work in. Mm-hmm. And my mindset at the time was that, okay, I'm taking money that's for the future. When no, that was my money anyway. It's a guaranteed contract, you know what I'm saying? But I didn't have the right representation at the time, I ain't gonna lie. R.I.P. Dan Fagan, I love you, but you know, it was a lot going on. It was discrepancies. I had two agents at the time, and I was trying to get out of my deal. And it was crazy. I was in St. Lucia. It was All-Star break. I had just came out of rehab for 30 days that I put myself in for not drugs, but for anxiety and depression. And it was the first time I actually made a decision for myself. So then I take my wife at the time. We go to St. Lucia. It's All-Star. And, you know, they're calling me. The Bucks, they're like, you know, you gotta come back, you gotta show up. You know, if you don't, you know, we're gonna sue you, all this stuff. You know, that my representation is telling me different things. And they were arguing at the time, mm-hmm. So they weren't on the same page. So I had one guy telling me this, one guy telling me that, man. And it got to the point where they're like, you know, if you don't come back, they're gonna start coming for your pockets. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know what? Just call Milwaukee and tell them why I'm gonna retire for free. No, actually, I said, don't tell them. I said, I want a press conference, and I'm going to tell the world why I'm retiring for free. I said, I don't want your money. I don't want it. I'm going anyway. And that was scary. But, like, for 2 hours, and they called me back, and they're like, you know, we got a deal on the table. Just don't come back. You ain't doing that press conference. Just, you know, see some paperwork. Go ahead about your business. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And, you know, that's how I got out of my deal. But, yeah, that was a scary 2 hours. Well, I didn't know how I was going to pay my bills for a minute.
Like but even that. Even then, like, you didn't have to. It was right after your contract. You didn't have to do nothing. You could have.
But that's the pressure, though. You know, I don't know.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So I'm just like, I'm not playing this game with y'all no more.
Because
I don't want to be here. I told y'all that. Y'all can't figure it out. Y'all keep the bread. Keep the money. You know what I'm saying? Then they call me, you know, they call me back with a deal on the table. I know they wanted some shit. Like, man, we've been working for this. Man, we need something out of this too. So
I know they always tell people, I said, the contract you signed is for what you did.
Yeah, but yeah.
It's not about what you're doing. Like, it's not what you're doing.
Yeah,
like,
some people say you're stealing money, but it's like, no, I worked for that contract. And if I would have put in 4 more years, that would have been for the next contract.
For the next contract.
You know what I'm saying?
But we learned that later.
You learn that later.
Yeah, we learned because everyone's like, oh, he got a 6-year $60 million. Yeah.
You got six years to get that next contract.
That's what I did. Like, right, now 6 years, my next 6 years to get some new money. Exactly. You know? But right now, you know.
That's for what I put in already. I worked
so
for it
like,
already.
So like, yeah, you only played 12 games. No.
Exactly.
I didn't sign another contract over there because I only played 12 games. That 111 was for the games I played. Already, that three-time All-NBA. Yes. That's what 111 came from.
Exactly.
You know how, you know, media and mm-hmm. everybody perceives it. They mm-hmm. try to make it seem like, well, you better be worth that money. No, that's why I signed it.
You stealing money.
No.
Yeah, facts.
My next contract will reflect what I did.
Exactly.
That's how that works.
Yep.
So while you were in the league, you started getting into other passions. You mentioned you like to write, you do music. So talk to me a little bit about the music side of it. Mm-hmm. How did you first get into that? And where did you feel comfortable? I think all of us as artists, like I do some writing some stuff too, I think all of his artists, creatives, are kind of taking that leap of faith of putting our stuff out there and getting responses from people.
Yeah, for sure.
When did you know that your music was good enough that you could start putting it out there, letting people listen to it, and eventually attain the success that you've attained doing it?
Yeah, well, I started making beats and producing my first year in the league when I was a rookie. And Drew Gooden actually put it in my hands. Oh, mm-hmm. Drew did. That's my dog. And yeah, he uploaded it on my computer. And you played with Drew, huh?
Yeah.
No. Oh, no, he played after you?
Nah, we just from high school.
Drew, yeah. So he taught me how to do it. It was Logic at the time. Then I learned Fruity Loops. And then when I left the league and retired, I moved out here and I started a company. I started an artist incubator for homeless artists called Citizens of Matter. And I had five homeless artists in this house in the Valley. And I had a producer who like a screenwriter. I had a fashion designer, a photographer, an R&B singer, and a producer. And we just worked on projects. I used my, I showed face to get them in certain rooms and doors and just pushed them, you know what I'm saying? They have to worry about money. I got them free clothes and shit like that. Just really went into my passion work. And at the time, while I'm doing that for them, I'm also learning from them, and I had some really talented guys. Business Boy being one of them who's like, he just did some shit with Elton John and Mary J. Blige. He's buying his second house, owns his car, like within a couple years mm-hmm. from being homeless, But just a little stability and a push can just go a long way for people. I wanted to do that. And I started learning. I made this beat and it got into the hands of Party Next Door. And one of the guys in the house is actually Party Next Door, who worked, Drake's artist. He's his engineer right now, like living engineer. He used to live with me, He was one of the homeless artists. Mm-hmm. And he was working with him and he got the beat over to him. And man, they just sent me back a track. And actually Drake cut the record first. Like the original record is Drake on the track. So we thought Drake was gonna drop it on like, was it summer 16? The one when he was beefing with Meek, that's when the record was actually cut. Mm-hmm. And it didn't drop until a couple years later on P3, which is Party Next Door's album called Don't Run. So the whole time we thought it was gonna be a Drake track. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, damn, my first track finna be a Drake track, that's crazy. but Party, I guess he gave it to Party and then we went gold off it. So, still good. So yeah, man, I think that was definitely solidifying, Like I could do this, And at a high, high level,
So when you wasn't playing, that's what you would be doing?
Yeah, making beats. On the airplane, in my hotel room. That shit really just caught me occupied.
You know so funny, that's so Jason Richardson. So we came in together, right? Mm-hmm. So I remember we got back together in Orlando. Uh-huh. So we sit next to each other. So he has his computer out. He has like this little board, and he's sitting here doing this.
Oh, he DJ.
Oh, this think he DJ sucks on this board. DJ Black and Mild. What is your name? So I'm just, I got everybody laughing because I'm making all kinds of black, dark names of a DJ. And he was like,
he's darkest hair. Yeah, that's my dog, Jay Rich, too.
Because I used to call his ass Midnight.
Right.
I used to call his ass, So, like, we're having Gatorade, and I'm like, yeah, man, they need to sponsor you, bro. So he's sitting there DJing. I was like, oh, what you DJing for? He was like, nah, I make all these mixes, because in the summer, I DJ for the parties. He said, man, when I'm not shooting and hooping, this is what I do.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here like, that's how you pass the time. Because, and when you play, you try to figure out how to pass.
Yeah, man, either you doing this or you doing
right?
something.
You pass it at an empty right. time. Right. And like, most of them is drinking.
Yeah, sir.
Drinking, looking for girls, trying to figure out. So it's like, I was a video gamer.
Okay.
And that's why I told people, I said, imagine when they had that, during the lockout, and they had that, what game was that? Call of Duty?
They
had that big Call of Duty was players versus pros and the players,
Fortnite
the players is looking amazing. I'm like, they damn near pros too. They Facts. Sit in the house 7-8 hours.
Facts.
Just sitting there, just gaming, because you got to try to figure out how to pass that empty time between mm-hmm. shit. What was it 1 and probably like 6 o'clock?
Yeah, right. And me, I'm a creative, so I need to be in a space where I'm like, creating something that's not there, mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like making songs or, putting something together. And basketball always kind of stunted that, because I could be creative on the court. Mm-hmm. That's only 2 hours.
Yeah.
So I got the rest of the day to figure some shit out now, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so So it was good, so I fell into the music.
You were on the Bucks when they drafted Giannis. You got to see a young Giannis come in.
Yeah.
Did you ever in your mind think that he would be as good as he is now when you first saw him?
Hell yeah.
Oh, you seen it?
Kid was impressive. I mean, he was 17, man. Like 17, bro. It's like coming in there, Euro stepping through the lane and, you know, picking the ball up at the half court.
Also, he was already.
He was, man, you could see it. He had that talent that, like, it was just rare.
Right,
like,
just,
yeah, you know, like Kevin Durant was the only person that was doing, you know, you could say was like moving how he was moving at the time. You know what I'm saying? This is a rookie at 17. That's you saying, like, that's your comparison? You know what I'm saying? Like, from my eyes, like, I just, his game was. It was very unique, and then he has a very boyish, fun, like, personality that makes it where, like, he just having fun out there competing. You can't really, there's not that much pressure on him. You're just out there having fun and playing.
Yeah.
You know, how that kid, you know, that kid energy, you know? And he practiced that way, so it kept him in the gym. You know, his eyes were always big, like, trying to take in shit. He came in, he thought I was a guard. He was like, I thought you were a guard. Like, I thought you, you know, just put the ball up. He barely speaking English and shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, no, I'm a big. But we the same height.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And he a little tall, actually. You know what I'm saying? So his you could just tell his mindset was different already. When I came in the league, yeah, I was putting the ball on the floor and shooting. I was a little different. I was a hybrid big, but I came in for Andrew Bogut. And he was a back to the basket, traditional post, who also blocked shots. So I feel like, I had went to the playoffs the year before I came. So they were trying to mold me into his position a little bit more. You know, it was a bunch of back to the basket hook shot shit all the time. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, but that's where my money was. You know, that's what it was gonna pay me. So, I focused on that. But I wanted to put that bitch on the ground and shoot it. And I think he saw that in me. He just saw the game differently. You know what I mean? He didn't see a limit on his potential. You know, there was no cap. And he played that way. And now you see, you know, he out there playing.
What's so funny is I tell kids sometimes, I said, you know, you got this, you're on this fine line between telling them other people, man, shut the fuck up, let me do me.
Right.
Like, there's a fine line between, because you got to remember, you know your limits. You know where you're trying to move and where you're trying to go. And then there's always someone that says, no, you can't do that. You got to do it this way. And you're like, man, we don't think like you no more.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's not my game. You're trying to make that my game. That's not my game.
Exactly.
This is my game. You know, it's like me, same thing. They were trying to make me a traditional point guard. No.
Right.
Right. Right. I see traditional. That's four shots a game right there.
Facts.
That nigga looks bored.
Facts.
He's four shots a game. Man. He looks miserable out there.
Man, he's taking a shower.
He's going through the lane and he has a wide open lane. He got to pull it back out and pass it into the big man.
Right. Run the play.
The big man's going to kick the ball in the stands. Nah, I'm good, bro. I'm going to take all these shots and y'all just got to figure that shit out.
Right.
You know, but there's. But you want to be the person that does that because if you're not, you're the one that's getting hurt. I remember Nick Young is one of those players. This style is like the style he was getting penalized for.
Exactly, yeah.
This style, you just run, chuck, and shoot.
Yeah.
This is his style, but he got benched all the time for it.
Yeah.
And you just be like, there's always that group of kids that just like, you're coming in and you changing the game, but you're not getting rewarded.
Exactly, no, for sure.
You're not getting rewarded for what the game is turning into. You're the one that you're suffering in your contract.
Yeah. Somebody gotta be that though. It's like, you know, it sucks.
Yeah.
It's like the Kanye thing. You know, I think that he did that in a lot of ways. Like he was like, fuck it, I'm gonna put myself out there and be the first to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna try it. Y'all gonna say I can't.
Y'all gonna hate me for it.
And then everybody gonna do it. Mm-hmm. So open the door.
Because the people who really benefit is the ones who don't have pressure. See, Giannis had come in, you two are playing, and he's like, well, they're not playing me. I don't care. I'm just going to go out there and do what I'm going to do.
Exactly.
And then they're looking at it like, hey, you see young fella over there that take that ball over and all right, just let him do it a little bit more. And then y'all sitting there like, man, I just tried that shit and you just, you subbed me.
Right, exactly. Yep.
That's why I tell people, look, When you come in at the end of the game, sometimes them little 4 minutes, bro, there ain't no pressure on them 4 minutes. You better do, hey.
They go crazy.
You better jump 360 between them and do what you got.
Dive the loose balls and everything. You know, I'm hustling hard.
Because you got to remember, when they put you in, they're looking at what you did. Yeah. So you go in there and you take 10 shots in 2 minutes, and they put you in a regular game, they expected that. Now you get to be this whole thing that they wasn't even expecting.
Right.
You know, so there's benefits to, you know, a little bit of everything. You just got to be willing to throw yourself out there.
Thanks.
Last question I got for you. What does the future hold for Larry Sanders?
Well, just, you know, a lot of work. You know, I'm working, man, on my art, my creative ventures. Like, I'm writing this basketball movie now that should be done. I should be going to production in probably like 3 months. A suspense thriller, a TV show, you know what I'm saying? I love creating content. So, yeah, man, just keep being creative. You know, I'm gonna stay in shape, you know, and if the league call me, you know, I'll be ready. I think like I said, the landscape and the format is a little more fitting to my lifestyle. And I know the value I can bring to a team. So, you know, if that happens, it happens, you know, but you gonna see me. I'm gonna be out here, regardless. So.
Larry, we appreciate you pulling up. This has been another episode of No Chill with Gilbert Arenas. We'll be back with more very soon.